Well, let me start by welcoming to our bi-monthly meeting of the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology our members, our presenters, the members of the wider science and technology community who have come to join us in our meeting here at the National Academy of Sciences headquarters. And let me thank as well for their interest the folks who are joining us for the webcast. We meet at a time of a great many compelling and challenging issues, not least of which is the relation between the budget challenges currently faced by the United States government, the implications of that for the health of the science and technology enterprise, for STEM education, specifically for the research and development budgets of the many agencies across the U.S. government that support so much of the research, and particularly the basic research that is so important to the future of our country. There is a lot of work going on following up a number of the reports that PCAST made to the President in the first term and the first part of the second. The President's Climate Action Plan, of course, is moving ahead smartly with many efforts going on parallel on the mitigation front, the preparedness front, the international front. Question of comprehensive immigration reform and its relation to the health of the science and technology enterprise is, of course, still on the table. We are tracking, and we will have sessions later today, looking at progress on implementing PCAST's recommendations on natural capital and ecosystem services. And, of course, we will be hearing this morning in the first part of the public session about the extraordinary work that's been going on implementing the President's management agenda for the second term, and also hearing about the challenges and opportunities in the domain of antimicrobial resistance. But before I introduce our first set of speakers, let me ask my co-chair, Eric Lander, for his welcoming remarks.
I will be very brief, simply to welcome PCAST and everyone here and everyone on the web. It has been an extraordinarily busy period still for PCAST, and we'll be discussing some topics, at least one of which I think will be the basis for yet another activity that PCAST will take on. So I'll say nothing more, and we'll jump right into our agenda.
And I will just say one more thing. Since our previous meeting, one member of PCAST has been announced by the President as a recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, Dr. Mario Molina. I am not sure there is any major award left in the world that Mario has not... has not corralled, but this is an enormous honor. Let me turn then to the first set of presentations on the President's management agenda. We are fortunate to be joined by Todd Park, who is Assistant to the President and the U.S. Chief Technology Officer, and Steve Van Roekel, who is the United States Chief Information Officer and Administrator of the Office of Electronic Government in the Office of Management and Budget. We could not have two people more centrally involved in the President's management agenda to tell us about it. More details of their bios are in the briefing books for the PCAST members. I won't take more of their time to read their bios. So Todd and Steve, thanks so much for being with us. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Dr. Holdren. Thank you, PCAST members, for having us today. And we're excited to talk about the President's management agenda. As you know, and when the President took office in 2009 as a very tech-savvy candidate and then senator and then president, he really brought the notion of bringing government into the 21st century and thinking about the implementation of technology, good processes, good people to transform government to better serve the American people. And I think we've made really good progress on that in the first term with integration of new technology, our work on open data, and thanks to a lot of the work you did around these tables with the PCAST group, we've been able to implement and think about how do we move the ball forward. Well, the president wanted to stand on the shoulders of that good work, and in July he assembled his cabinet to ask the government to take it a step above, and he called on the cabinet members to join together to think about his second term and how shaping management and a well-run management agenda can lead to great benefit. And so since July, Todd and I and Sylvia Matthews-Burwell, the head of the Office of Management Budget, along with other White House leaders, have been really hard at work getting ideas, gathering ideas, working through tough questions and tough problems to determine where should we focus and how should we do big things. And our key metric here is not only, you know, thinking about the plumbing of government, how are we driving better benefit there, but also how are we doing things that are knowable and feelable out with the American citizen and tackling those challenges we want to tackle. The four key areas we've sort of thought about and the questions we've asked ourselves that have led to this are areas that I'll highlight and then Todd will go into more detail upon. First is effectiveness. You know, how are we best serving American citizens? How are we delivering services in a 21st century way that changes the game in the way we think about government service? The second is efficiency. You know, in a flat or declining budget environment, how are we driving savings into government, you know, taking from the OPEX column to give to the CAPEX column so we can fund investments and fund new things that we do? The third is economy, which sort of sounds strange in the context of a management agenda, but if you think about process improvement or opening up government data or opening up government intellectual property, you know, things that have been central to this group, you can actually move GDP in thinking about what we can do on economy. And the last is people. How do we attract, train, retain, and optimize the workforce, the federal government? And so these centers of gravity, if you will, are starting to coalesce into generating for us the big ideas that will be feelable and knowable with the American citizen.
And just to talk a bit more about each of those four areas, we want to build on remarkable work that's already happened and scale up amazing things that have been tried in different parts of the government, come up with new cross-government ideas to pursue. And so I'll just talk about just briefly four examples to help illustrate what we're talking about there. So in the area of effectiveness, in the area of better, faster, smarter service to the American people, leveraging tech and innovation, a great emerging example is what FEMA's been doing to leverage technology and innovation to improve disaster response and recovery. So, for example, when FEMA in the past was trying to figure out how to get housing assistance to folks, they had to rely upon on-the-ground inspectors to go out and look at homes. And now it's happening, post-Sandy and Oklahoma, et cetera, is that FEMA's able to look at aerial images, all kinds of other data, to much more rapidly make assessments and get aid to folks who need it much faster, much more expeditiously. In addition, in terms of registering for aid post-Sandy, 57% of folks who registered for aid post-Sandy were able to do so via mobile and internet apps and websites, which is both more efficient and more effective for everybody involved. Even folks who actually had lost access to electricity and internet were helped by FEMA agents armed with iPads who would go around and instantaneously register them for aid. So this is smarter, better, faster government service at work and the kind of thing we want to scale. In the realm of efficiency, getting more bang for a government buck, a great emerging example here is the work my brother-in-arms, Steve Van Roekel, with a process called Portfolio Stat, which is a process running across agencies where they take a look at their portfolios and say, look, where is there duplication, opportunity for improvement, et cetera. One great example of a result is USDA had 21 different email systems, and they have now actually moved to a single email system in the cloud, which works better for everybody. You can actually now send an email to everyone at USDA, if you're the secretary, easily, and also costs a lot less. And Portfolio Stats, in fact, identified about $2.5 billion of savings to date, and there is much more on the way. It's just the tip of the iceberg. In the zone of economy, like how government operations can better support economic growth, I think a great example here is the whole idea of government as a platform for innovation. And there's an idea that we've talked a lot with you all about over the last couple of years, an initiative that is in growing bloom, the Open Data Initiative, to basically take data taxpayers already paid for in weather, climate, education, science, health, public safety, finance, et cetera, and open that data up in machine-readable form for free and easy access by everybody, so entrepreneurs can actually take that data and turn it into new innovations, new companies, and jobs. Like examples we've talked about in the past, iTriage, a company in Denver started by a couple of ER docs that uses data from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and where all the doctors and hospitals are to build an app that helps you, based on where you are and what's happening, you find the best local doctor for you, the best local help for you, and help book an appointment with that provider. So an app that's been downloaded over 9 million times has literally saved lives and created over 100 great middle-class jobs in Denver. Companies like Opower, locally here in Virginia, that's leveraged a whole bunch of data about weather, about energy use patterns, energy appliance efficiency, et cetera, energy efficiency appliances, to help power a service that helps give you tips on how to save on your electrical bill. And it's literally saved American consumers hundreds of millions of dollars to date, thus far in its young life, and created hundreds of jobs. And so open data, we've talked to y'all quite a lot about, it's a great example of turning government into a platform for innovation, economic growth, is again a key element of our emerging management agenda. And then in the final category, we've been doing a lot of talking with folks actually across government about management agenda, getting lots of ideas and thoughts. And there's this emerging thread around people and culture being a critical enabler of all of the above, And so there is a lot of very exciting potential here. And again, just one of many examples of action or another program that we talked with y'all about in the past, the Presidential Innovation Fellows Program, where we're bringing in amazing innovators from the private sector, tech innovators, to work with the best innovators inside government on game-changing projects like open data and other initiatives that can help generate huge benefit for the American people. So these are just a few examples, but I think the common denominator across all of them and a really central focus for the management agenda is that it's all about results. It's all about results. What the president really wants to deliver is not a set of processes or a set of documents or a set of interim deliverables, right? What he really wants the management agenda to produce is actual improvement in the lives of the American people, right? A government that actually delivers better, smarter, faster services to citizens' businesses, right? One that actually gets more bang for buck, right? One that actually helps spur growth in GDP and jobs as a direct result of management agenda actions, and one that continually advances on the people and culture front to be better able to do all the above in terms of delivering those kinds of results to the American people. So it's very, very exciting to be working on this. The president could not be more excited about it, is personally sponsoring it, just hugely valuable, obviously, as we press forward with an agenda to make government better. So with that, actually, I think we'd like to open it up for questions.
Good. We will follow our usual process where PCAST members wanting to ask a question or make a comment raise their name tag. Well, let me ask the first question while others are organizing their thoughts. What would you characterize as the biggest obstacle to that you're encountering as you try to advance the president's management agenda in the various ways you've talked about? What's the biggest challenge toward getting all of this done?
I think there's really two that have risen to the top. One is there's an embedded culture in government around the way I do things in the future is the way I've done things in the past, and thinking about continuous improvement and how do I change the game. You will often see this, and I'm sure many of you have seen it in your private sector lives or in academia, where if you want to improve a process or make a process electronic, they will just take the old process and try to make that process electronic versus rethink the process altogether. And so there's this sort of mentality and culture of, you know, the prescription I've done in the past is the way I do it in the future. The second is the budget environment. It in this current environment where we've got the you know the blunt instrument of sequestration and a lot of uncertainty for the future, it makes it really tough for people to think about how do I invest, how do I do multi-year investments that can drive benefit well into the future. And so we're looking at and discussing and as part of the management agenda, are there things we can do to get smarter about consolidating resources across agencies, to do shared services and strategic sourcing where we buy once, use often across government, things that you could quickly find low-hanging fruit to save resources and then drive that forward. I think if you break down those cultural walls and start to streamline the way you do budgeting, that creates a bow wake that people can ride within, I believe.
The other thing I would say is that there are no shortage of truly amazing, high-impact ideas for how to make government better. And one of the pieces of advice that we found most valuable from veterans of government who have been through efforts over the years along the lines of improving government, the advice was prioritize, right? It's going to be very difficult because the ideas are also spectacular, right? But you can't do all of these things simultaneously. You can't do them all at once. And it's going to be critically important to basically pick, based on impact, the most important things to do, the things that will be of most benefit to the American people, and then double down and really focus on getting those things done. And so I think it's going to be a challenge because there are so many good ideas and so many opportunities for improvement. But prioritization and focus is going to be key, I think, to actually delivering the results that the president is really focused on us delivering.
Good. Craig Mundy.
It's a question actually for both of you in different capacities. What, you know, the use of advanced information technologies is clearly at the heart of many of these things that you've prioritized. And the Open Data Initiative is also a way to try to get value out of the government's investments. And, you know, we've sort of watched with you, you know, over the first term, particularly how that has evolved. You know, my view is sort of data.gov is sort of in V2 now, and I'm kind of curious if you have a view you could share with us about how you see the evolution of the Open Data Initiative beyond the, you know, the I'll call it the entrepreneurial approach only, as it has been of necessity. And in particular, Steve, you know, what do you see happening, you know, within the OMB environment and your office in terms of breaking down the barriers to more and more aggressive adoption of these high-scale facilities that are demonstrated in the public sector and sort of haven't yet found their way into deployment in the government? What are the barriers is the big question.
So I'll take the first part of the question, which is that a big breakthrough on the open data front was earlier this year when the president issued his historic open data executive order. So what had been happening to date was very entrepreneurial, if you will, efforts inside the government, startup efforts inside the government to launch open data initiatives on health, energy, education, global development, that were liberating data, making it machine readable, putting it on data.gov, doing data jams, data palooza to spur use, et cetera. Building on those efforts, the president then did with the executive order to say, look, going forward, the new default for all new data, all modernized data created going forward by the government shall be open and machine readable by default. And then on top of that, simultaneously was issued a very detailed set of guidelines and tools for how to actually do that, all of which was actually posted along with other tools on Project Open Data, a GitHub repository, which is iterating as agencies really implement the policy to develop tools that are most helpful to do this. And so this is really wonderful to actually move to open data being the new default. Obviously, you know, data that should be protected for the purposes of privacy and national security will remain protected. You know, but the notion of the new default for data that can be openable being open, and for that default to be machine readable in open formats, is just a big breakthrough step. So there'll be further action on that front. Furthermore, data.gov is moving to a V2 There is a new beta edition of it called next.data.gov that you should check out. Among many other things that are exciting about, I think that one of the most exciting things about is actually something that's not obvious from looking at the screens, right, which is that data.gov to date had been a site, right, where data got posted on it manually, right? So essentially agencies would submit spreadsheets with their metadata for each data listing, and that would get entered into data.gov. And what's happening as per the executive order of data policy is that every agency now is going to be publishing in a JSON file, right, an index of all their data metadata, right, openly. And then data.gov is going to, leveraging a CCAN backend, like harvest all of that automatically and have it materialized in data.gov. And frankly, anyone else can harvest those files as well. So it's moving to a much more open, no pun intended, kind of meta framework, if you will, right, for open data, which will just help turbocharge the ecosystem further. So great progress on multiple fronts to really get to the next level on open data.
And if that play sounds familiar, it should for all of you, because we modeled it off of your health IT report on the tech section of how to think about metadata, how to publish metadata connections back to the sources and things that we were doing there. The barriers, you know, that we really saw, and we tried to address these as we came out with the executive order. The executive order and the policy that Todd and I published at the time that orders government to take these new approaches really tried to address some of the barriers and to think about how we would get through those barriers. And the main barrier for us was just the intellectual capacity of the agencies of government to understand, how do I architect data in a proper way? How do I, you know, while respecting privacy and confidentiality and everything else, start to open my data in this interoperable machine-readable way? And so we, as Todd mentioned, created a suite of tools that that the public can contribute to that, you know, will convert and help agencies walk through this stuff. We also created a special team within government that can be deployed to these agencies to help them. It was the team that basically got the 300 to 400 APIs launched this last May that are continuing every day to go in and kind of swoop in and help agencies unlock the potential there. And then the Presidential Innovation Fellows has been an incredible lever for us, where we've taken private sector people that just know how to do this and it's in their DNA, and have dropped them into the key areas where we want to see data open, energy, health, you know, other things from there. And then the order helps us a lot. You know, it basically says, and we've got mechanisms now to track, including the formation of a cross-agency priority goal, something that the president pays attention to and we bring up to the secretaries and depth secretaries, a series of metrics and deliverables that says anytime you create a new system, you have to build it in this way. Anytime you greatly modify an existing system, you have to build it in this way. And then we'll find targeted opportunities to say there's public value here, so let's go in and just in a way that's not new or greatly modified, open up that data. And so we're starting to see this momentum. I think there's still room in the scientific space. I think there's still room in kind of the big data stuff that we do. You know, the work we've done in weather and other things have kind of shown us the way there, but there's still lots of potential and lots of work yet to do for us. But I think we're crawl, walk, run. We're getting into the walk phase, I think, a little bit.
Good. Maxine Savitz is next.
You mentioned the efficiency and that you save $2.5 billion, and we have budget constraints. Are there incentives at all to the agencies that they're able to take those savings and use it for programs or things like that, or is there a barrier becomes, well, if I do this, so it makes ultimate sense, I'm going to lose this money? And so is that something?
That's definitely a cultural barrier we see on the, you know, ROI is not realized with the person who actually does the hard work to get the savings. And luckily, you know, this is one of the places where fiscal pressure actually helps us, in that there is a greater mindset of, if I drive savings, I can get better service and get that out. The good story here is, if you look at the president's fiscal year 14 budget, tech spending actually goes up a little bit, 78 basis points, which is relatively flat year over year, and adjusted for inflation, very flat. But it's telling us a narrative that we're starting to win the mind share on, now is the time to invest in technology. You know, when the going gets tough, it's time to invest. And so we're very much moving the allocations in a way across an organization that say, as you realize savings, let's invest in those savings. The budget guidance that came out on the tech budget last year that I oversee actually said to agencies, you must cut 10% of your technology spending, and I'm going to automatically give you back 5% to invest in these certain areas. And it was on citizen-facing services, direct employee productivity, or cybersecurity were the three areas. And then I asked agencies to give me an additional 5%, netting to zero, that said, in those same categories, what are your priority things you would do? And then we could look at the president's priorities and adjust across government. And so I think in the aggregate, we're in pretty good shape from tech spending. Like I said, we're winning the mindshare discussions with Congress and realizing that tech is really going from this very discretionary thing to this very strategic thing, and we're starting to see the benefits of that in the realized savings. So.
Good. Jim Gates, please.
Good morning. Thank you again for your brief. It's always great to have you guys back. I was wondering about a slightly different question. Clearly, data.gov is aimed at the federal government, and you guys are pioneering best practices for economic and delivery of information from government to citizens. But I was wondering, do you see any examples where your best practices are causing state governments to think about using some of these models?
That's a terrific question, and yes, we are. For example, more and more states, like New York State, are opening up their own open data portals. And in fact, there's a new section on data.gov that is for state and local data, where states and localities can voluntarily list their data and metadata about their data and have it really become a one-stop shop for innovators and entrepreneurs to find data of all kinds. It's very, very useful. I mean, there's an extraordinary amount of data that's really useful to citizens at the state and local government level, and so we look forward to turbocharging that kind of work going forward.
And there's cities.data.gov is that site. And the other aspect here is the power of data in vibrant democracies. And we've been doing a lot of work internationally. Data.gov was created in an open source way. And we worked actually directly with the Indian government to deploy data.gov in their environment, which they're using to fight corruption and other things. And then many other countries are now coming on board to implement our data.gov in their environments. For example, we now track stolen cars using open data across the Mexican and Canadian borders, and Amber Alerts are quickly coming behind. We actually do that with Canada now, and I'm meeting with all the North American tech leadership in the next month to kind of continue the work we're doing there. So we're getting into not only the open data aspects, but the transactional aspects as well, much to the benefit of all of our citizens.
Hi, I think you've talked great about how technology is going to help achieve the agenda. I guess I was interested in any comments you might have on how the president's management agenda will affect the doing of science and technology, particularly that the government supports and runs.
It's a great question. One of the really interesting ideas being worked on as part of the government as a platform idea is the whole notion of looking at our R&D infrastructure and our R&D investments and seeing if there are really creative ways to accelerate and improve the rate of transfer of that technology and that know-how into the marketplace. There are all kinds of terrific ideas have been generated, as I'm sure you know, on this front, and it's something that we're very excited about, and so that's one area. I think also one of the themes really being emphasized by different folks participating in the process is the importance of people and culture, right, and how people and culture underlies the ability to do all of this. The work that you've done and others have done on how do we actually continue to get more and more of the best and brightest folks, right, to engage in government and work with government on issues like S&T. Those ideas are ones that folks are really thinking hard about as we think about how to actually continue to advance the ball on people and culture as key enablers, as key engines that really drive progress on all these fronts. And so I think that emerging work is really, really exciting, and there'll be more of that soon.
Good. Well, I see no more flags up. Not that we've really exhausted the subject, but I think people know that the time for this session is coming to a close. I just offer Todd and Stephen an opportunity. If you have any closing words you'd like to share, this is the moment.
We always love speaking with PCAST. We take every opportunity we can to come be with you. open invitation to invite us back on this and other topics, because we just love this group, and we love the chance to interact with you both formally in these settings and informally as well. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
And I think as we go forward with the formation of the agenda, I think Todd and I both believe this won't be a three-ring binder we just publish and put out there and, you know, do a press release around it, but it'll be a series of things we do from both deliverables, initiatives, and culture-changing things that we want to look at for the long term. I think there'll be ample opportunity for this group to help think through some of the tough problems and help us break a little China and inspire people. So thank you.
Great. Well, we thank you both for the work that you're doing, and we wish you well, you and your teams, as you push this agenda.